in real tent. You're telling me the story of the guards, Welsh guards attack on Mount Piccolo and Mount Grand.
Grand that's right.
They were on Mount, which were they actually going up?
I think it was Grand.
Grand, yeah. And you'd move forward, and then you saw these two figures approaching.
I saw these two figures moving as though they were taking shelter. I got the impression they were trying not to be seen, coming down towards me. I got the gunner onto it. I said, be careful, two figures coming up. Follow them as they come through. And they came right through, and as they came out of the trees near us, they came forward, hands up, and I jumped down, pointed my right revolver at them, and asked them what they were doing there. And they said, oh, for God's sake, don't shoot, the Welsh guards. Well, I was a bit wary, because the Germans tried tricks like that before. So I said, oh yes, where did you come from? He said, we've come from the high point. He said, the Germans were there when we got there. I said, they've been cut to pieces. He said, as we were fired on, we rolled, fell and rolled, and rolled down the hillside. And he said, we were stopped by some bushes. And we realised there was no point in going back, because the attack was a failure. Anyway, the Germans were in the subcountries. We've come along, we saw you were here, so we've come to go back and report the situation. So I said, all right. So I convinced them that they were Welsh guards, and I reported it to Squadron Headquarters. I said, two of the tall men are here. I'm sending them back to you. Keep an eye open for them, so that they did get there. And they went there, and the story was verified, and it was a failure.
Now, that meant you couldn't go up this road.
That was right. So I just had to wait for any further orders would come. So the orders were, Peter 1, stay just where you are, fire anything that comes along, observe and wait. Further orders would come later. I said, right. Well, as the sun got up, I could see along a sort of sheltered valley to the left. And that was rather inviting, I wonder what's up there. So I moved forward to another little group of trees who were on a little sort of hillock. And I got into my vision with the fire. I could fire up this little re-entrant, if you like. And I watched, and I didn't see anything. I don't know how long I watched for, but I was boom, they were knocking it out and had another look. And I got a hunch that there might have been something up there. And then suddenly I saw a dispatch rider at the far end of this little valley come along, stop. And he got on his motorbike and went into what I thought was a some shelter area. Couldn't see what it was, really. And I thought, it's camouflage netting. That's what it is. And I watched the motorbike was still there, and I got the gunner onto it quickly. I said, Travis, left. Top of that valley, you'll see what looks like a little shelter. I said, yeah, you got on that. He did. And the rider came out, the rider of the motorbike, got on and went off. He said, I've seen him. Shall I fire? I said, no, not yet. I said, the range, I forget the range, it was about 600 or 800 yards, it was quite a reasonable range. And I said, load HE. And he loaded HE with that MP. And he fired first round. Stuff disappeared in all directions. I said, fire five, HE, spread them a little bit, because I thought it might have been a command post where the night operations were planned. And the five was spread round, and the stuff that flew, there were maps and boxes, people running around. And we fired a couple more, I think, just to put, the wind of anybody who might be lurking in the bushes. And then we ceased firing. I reported it to Squadron Headquarters and told them what had happened. And they treated him quite convinced that we would not be going any further. He said, well, stay and just watch and see what goes on. So I stayed. And then, of course, the Germans got rather annoyed that we knocked out their command post. And shells came over them. But I was beautifully sheltered by this hill on my right. And poor old Alan on the road. He was badly wounded because the shells went onto the road area, and the one, I think, hit a tree, and he got a wound in the neck. And he was taken away. I thought there'd been a honey sent for him, but I think he's of the opinion he got a lift by a jeep from guards who happened to be there who had realised that the attack had failed and were going back. So they gave him a lift back. And I just stayed there, and we stayed there, and nothing much happened that day. But it would be quite an occasion that morning, because it was a, we'd intended going through that gap.
Do you know the date of that attack?
I can't remember.
No, it's fine. They can look up it in regimental history, isn't it? Now, that brings us quite on to the end of May. How were you doing with your own personal morale? I mean, you know, you'd been a bit nervous to start with. How were you feeling?
Quite accustomed to it. One day was followed the next. I never know whether I'd see the next day, but that was just one of those things. I got used to listening for sounds. I recognised sounds of guns and knew which type it was and things like that. And you just take to the days as they came. You realise that it could end at any minute, but there it was.
Now, the next thing then is the advance on Rome,
yeah.
Which I know you didn't get to, but we'll come to that part of the story. Now, this is in June 1944, generally.
Yeah.
What was the nature of these activities? Also, you see very much it's the use of HE and supporting infantry, disrupting German infantry. And there don't seem to be many tanks about, German tanks. Now, is that the case so far? I mean,
there were tanks about, but they were not in front of me. They were in front of others, unfortunately.
Or fortunately.
From my point of view, I was extremely fortunate. They were not in front of me. They were in front of some of the others. Some of them were knocked out. But I was extremely fortunate.
So it's not that they weren't there, and it was that you didn't meet them.
I didn't meet them. There were some.
You almost sounded as if you wanted to meet them for a there.
I didn't, because I knew my gun was hopeless against them, unless it were a matter of mark one or two. But I didn't see any, no. I was fortunate. They were in other sectors, and they met other groups. And the Germans tended to concentrate anti-tank guns and tanks where they thought there would be a major attack. And we tended to be in the sort of more hilly areas where they didn't expect tanks to be. They thought they'd be in the flatter areas. And some of the regimental, well, the groups were there, the Lancers and people like that, maybe they met more than we did.
How about these hilly areas? I mean, tanks aren't that good in mountains and hills.
It was extremely difficult. Extremely difficult.
What was the terrain like that you could operate in?
Hilly. It was hilly. And it was very difficult. You were very often confined to roads or a bit of open ground at the side, but there was no way that you could open a squadron out and advance as a squadron. You know what I mean? You open the squadron out and advance with four troops up moving forward, there was no chance of that. You operated along roads and in little bits of open country, alongside roads to make sure they were clear, and this was the way we advanced until we got near Rome, and that was more open country.
What about German aircraft? Did you see much of them?
No sign of them. No sign of them. Occasionally we saw, at least if they were there, we didn't hear them, we certainly didn't see them, and they made no effort to bomb us. We were nearly knocked out by hurricanes, I think it was at one time.
Can you tell us that story?
Yes, we were travelling along a sunken road, moving forward in line. It was a sunken road. And a hurricane flew over, and he must have spotted armour. Now, we didn't carry identification signs on the top like the Americans did. And I can well understand the pilot flying past sees armour, but he's at such a speed he can't identify it as tigers. It's just tanks to him. And he went along, roared round, and then came down right across us. And he went up as he went to the back. And I was watching this character. He turned round again in a big loop and came straight down for us, and I thought, this chap's going to rocket us. So we had canisters of yellow smoke, and I thought, well, here goes. I threw one out, and the smell of yellow smoke billowed up, and the chap went, I was very thankful to see him disappearing. Not that I didn't like the hurricanes when they were on our side, but I thought that was a bit much. It looked as though he was going to give us a load of rockets. So he went off, and my gun was ready to light. He did watch it too.
Now, what about the problem? You were on the roads and near the roads. So one thing about that is, if the Germans get time, is mines. Was that a risk that you were aware of, or very aware of?
We were very aware of it, yes. They were a bit negligent at times. One of the They didn't really mind the roads except outside towns where you were forced by the road from the town to go over that stretch of road. That what they were past masters of was mining areas where there was a blow. They'd blown a little bridge on the road, and you've got to find a diversion. And they made an obvious diversion down to one side, and they very often mined that. And as it was rough ground, you couldn't readily see it. You can't readily make a hole in a road and cover it up without leaving some sort of trace, you see. So you could see it, they'd mine the road, sometimes from a distance. One chap went down into a river bottom. Tank went down, and it went on to, I think, probably 2 miles underneath. It killed the sergeant and it killed the driver of the tank. You've got to be careful with that, because they were not past muster.
Anything else about this period? As you came out to the mountains, didn't you? Into the plains
towards Rome, yes. And there we had a beautiful day. It was a gorgeous sunny day, and it was just like a Sunday morning ride. I think it was something, I'm not sure. We went along this open sort of flat land. There was a part of the old Roman road there. It was quite amazing, and we went on flat out. We were making a plan, we were heading towards Rome, you see, and we'd hoped we'd get there in good time before anybody else did. And we were going flat out, no trouble, no opposition. An odd shell or two going over, they weren't aimed at us, they were just flying overhead. And we just pushed on. And suddenly the squadron leader boys came from me, "Hell are you, Peter One, where the hell are you? I can like see Rome from where we are. Can you? Oh, you too far ahead. Slow down. You're on your own. You get into trouble, there's nobody to help you." We were about 5 or 10 miles ahead of them, I think. He said, "There's no visit to the boat out." Oh, as I looked down, there was a chap taking stakes from a dead horse by the roadside, and he just looked up when they had the engine of the tank going past, just carried on cutting. And we went on. I could see Rome, I could see the towers and the spires and the buildings of Rome in the distance, shimmering in the heat haze. It was a gorgeous day. And suddenly had an order. All stations, Peter One, halt where you are. Do you hear? Halt where you are. I thought, heaven help us, now what? Because this was an urgent order, normally they halt where you are. Do you hear? Halt where you are. I said, we'll come out here and halt into the position where we can defend ourselves in case of an attack. And after about maybe 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, the rest of the squadron rolled up. Don't do that again, don't get too far advanced, you're out on your own, you know. I said, yes, didn't realise you were so far behind. I said, right, Ogle, we had an Ogle, and we went, all the officers. We've been told we are not going into Rome, not going into Rome. Our orders are to bypass Rome. Gave us the map references. We have new maps, we lost the old ones anyway. We're going in a great arc round the east, and we've got to strike highway so and so as soon as possible and try and contact the enemy before nightfall. Any questions? Well, nobody got much in the way of a question, and somebody said, we're getting a chance to go in the river. Instruction that we would bypass Rome, and that was what we had to do. Well, we set off in a great wide arc. We passed poor slogging infantry, covering them with dust as we went along. And we went through the French artillery lines. They were firing over our heads. There was a German encampment or a battalion or company group holding some high ground over to the right, way over to the right, the French artillery were pasting them, and we went under their guns between the two of them to get to our new centre line. The French they shouted, but we couldn't understand French. We shouted in English, but it didn't make any difference. And we went through. It was rather funny, really. Eventually, we got to this new centre line, and we covered some miles to it, actually. And I remember giving the orders to my troop when I got back from the order group. And I said, we're not going to go into Rome. I think the Americans will be doing that. Yeah. But the Yanks, they'll have the feet up under the table. Well, we are meeting the enemy by nightfall. They were very pleased about that, of course. So we pushed on. We got to this road, out of Rome. Now, I was leading troop again, and I stopped to the order halt. I don't know how far north of Rome it was quite a distance. And there was a sort of hill to the right, so I pulled off the road to the middle of this hill where I got a bit of cover. And I got the other two tanks off the road as well. And we just stayed there watching. And over on the left, I could see some vehicles coming towards us. So Cavus guns on the vehicles, you know what they were at the time. And got through binoculars, and I spotted that they were M10 tank destroyers. Now, I didn't know who they were, and I reported that I'd seen what looked like tank destroyers on the left. And the squadron leader came to me and said, yes, he said, there's a free French unit operating in this area, probably belonging to the one we've been contacting just recently. And as they came across this open ground, the tiger was way over on the left, German artillery spotted them and shelled them. And they were shelled all around, and of course, some casualties. There were two of them, I think. They dashed over to the road where we were, and they came down the road. We have to say we were off the road. They stopped for a moment to bind up the wounds and those who'd been injured in the shelling, and then they tootled down the road past us and waved as they went past. They disappeared in the distance, and the Germans were trying to shell the road. But because of the hill to my right, they couldn't shell the road, so they were going over them into the open ground beyond. And we stayed there for a while. Wasn't anything to do. And I think from there we were ordered to push on. And that was where we were knocked out by C squadron. Because we went along the main road when we were given orders to push on. And there was nothing, there were no Germans around, there were just shattered trees and things like that, I remember. And it was a very nice day, we were going along quite nicely, and there was no sign of anything. And suddenly, a shot went across my front, from behind. I could see its trace, and it was an arm-piercing shot, but I could see its trace, it was coming from behind me. So I immediately sent the squadron headquarters, and they shot out from behind. I think it's our circle friends. Oh, impossible.
Circle meaning sea.
That's right, sea squadron. Yeah. I use the terms that code term. Yes, it was sea squadron. At that moment, another one went past. I said, impossible, nothing. I've just seen another one go past. He said, oh. I said to the driver, I said, put your foot down, get behind that house. There was a house about 30 yards ahead. He put his foot down and we roared off. Just as we got to the house, about 3 yards from it, there was an almighty thump on the front of the tank. There was sparks and smoke inside everywhere, heavens above. So we rolled, fortunately, behind the house. There was no track on the left-hand side, and there was no fire, but there was smoke inside and shorts and all sorts of things. And,
electrical shorts.
Electrical shorts, yes. And I said to the squadron leader, I said, we've just been knocked out by some idiot on our left, out. And I jumped down and had a look at the tank. The sprocket and all the front had been smashed off. Track had gone, that was behind us. And
so it had hit the front left?
It hit the front left, where the sprocket was.
The tank sprocket?
Yeah, where the driving sprocket is at the front. It had hit there and just behind it, I reckon. And blew the track off and the sprocket off. And 18 inches back, it would have been in the ammunition. A marvellous shot. And a driver jumped out this minute ago. He's had it, no doubt about that. I said, yes, you can say that again. Anyway, I said, I'll report it. So I got back in the tank and said to the squadron leader, I said, well, you've been knocked out now. He did, by somebody on our left, I'm sure. He said, yes. He said, I've served the friends off of there. I'm going to fight you. I said, so and so think so too. Very annoying. I was considered to be knocked out by the Germans or something, but by sea squadron was another entirely. Anyway, I said,
couldn't they recognise the shape of the Sherman? I mean, because we've been discussing that they look like tower blocks.
Yes, but listen what happened. It was a sergeant who was at the front, you see. Now, the squadron leader was way back, he couldn't see what it was. And it was getting in late afternoon, the light was failing a little bit. And they had been told, sea squadron, anything that moved along that road was German. Hit it. Squadron leader heard the sergeant come on and say, traffic's moving along that road, tanks. He said, I think it's Sherman's. Squadron leader said, you've got your bloody orders, man. Hit it. Got his orders, so he hit it. And it was me. Unfortunately, but I think he fired two shots across my front to let me know that to try and get a message back, you see. And his third shot hit me on the front, because I think he aimed off there. I can't believe it was such a rotten shot that he couldn't hit a tank at that range, I think.
What range would it be?
It would probably be 1,000 yards or something like that.
Now, one thing about this we haven't discussed, in which is the Sherman's reputation for catching fire.
Yes.
Were you aware of it by then? Because, I mean, you hadn't been in the Sherman's that long.
Yes, I wasn't aware that it caught fire so readily, but I was aware that it caught fire fairly quickly. But some of them that were hit didn't catch fire immediately, but they, if you put one shot in, it didn't necessarily catch fire. It depends where it hit it. But if you put a second shot in, then it usually went up in flames immediately. But not always on the first one, because I can think of several tanks that were hit once, like my own, for example, that was hit, but it didn't go up in flames. And I was hit another time with an AG, but that didn't go up.
Did you get out quickly?
I jumped out, I did quickly.
What about your crew?
I said stay there, because they were sheltered by the house. And there was no danger of it going up, because I knew it had hit the front and that it wouldn't have come on fire from there. It would have been the back.
One thing, did you practice getting out of the tank quickly?
Didn't need to. You got out. Whenever you had to get out, you got out quickly. You weren't past master of that, too. Yes.
So what happened then? I mean, you'd lost your tank.
But I'd lost my tank. So I told the squadron leader, no one said in terms of what I thought of the situation, and I said, I'm taking over another vehicle. So I took my turret crew, after much complaining, and took my focus tank. That was routine. If my tank was knocked out, I carried on with the orders, but taking another tank. And I took my corporal's tank, as he was the junior NCO, and my sergeant went with me. I could have used...
Do you mean your wireless operator and gunner?
Yeah,
went
I took them with me, because I was used to them. I suppose I should have used the corporals, but I thought, well, I like mine, I'm used to them, and they can come in. And they did.
So you took over the sergeant's tank?
No, corporal's.
The corporal's tank, right, sorry.
Yeah. He was a junior NCO, and I had the sergeant with me, you see. And I took over their tank, and I went forward. And we went about 500 yards further on. And we were then ordered to stop and observe and fire. We were fired on, of course, and check. And we stayed there until the light was so bad we couldn't see anything. And we were then ordered to retire. And at that time, infantry came up and dug in by the roadside in slit trenches and took up positions along our centre line and along the area in which we'd taken over, which was the normal routine.
Now, believe it, the lager afterwards, you met the sergeant who'd done it.
I did, that's right, yeah. And I'm going to sort him out, you see. So, in harbour, we did all the normal chores and that sort of thing, ammo and the rest of it. And I Seaport. Well, I don't see the seals knock me out. So I went over to Seaport, and then they were over to the left on a little rise in the ground. And I walked over, and the sentry heard me coming. And I made enough noise so that he would. And I said, "Can I see who knocked me out of things?" So he said, "Yes, he said, Sergeant Fraser's over there waiting for you." Well, I went to see the sergeant, and he had told the squadron leader and he'd been ordered to fire. Because he didn't believe that they were English tanks, you see. But I can understand how it happened. You see, we had advanced a lot further than the information had been passed to RHQ, and they not passed it on to C Squadron. So as far as C Squadron was concerned, anything on that road was German. I can understand how the error happened, and I can understand the squadron leader saying to the sergeant, Fraser, hit it because it's German, and he carried out orders, and that was it. But he apologised and said, "Well, Charlie didn't hurt anybody, said that's the main thing." I said, "Yes, you're right, but no hard feelings."
Did you get a new tank?
Yeah.
I mean,
next morning.
So you'd leave your corporal's tank?
Well, I had to leave it at that house anyway. We took all the stuff out of it that we wanted.
No, I mean, what I mean is, you took over the corporal's tank.
Yeah.
You'd leave that, he'd get that tank back.
Oh, yes, he got his own tank back with his own crew. And by that next morning, the new tank had come up. They got loads up and around.
Now, there is a question, though, that some of the tanks had, which I didn't know about, but I hear C mentioned, that had different, they were salvage jobs.
Yeah, they did. They were all salvaged, the tanks that had been knocked out, cleaned out, and if the hull was in good condition, it had another tub put on it from a tank that had the hull ruin. Yeah, that was standard practice.
And was yours one of these?
It was, yeah.
And did that make any difference to you?
Well, we were always a bit wary about the gun firing accurately. And the first available opportunity we tested the gun sights. They were supposed to have been checked by armourers before they left the replacement pan. If you follow what I mean? They had a stack of these things already, cannibalised from one tank and another, put together, and they were replacement tanks. They were supposed to have been checked by armourers to sight and test the gun for accuracy. And if you got it first thing in the morning, there was no way you could check it until you fired. And the one we had worked all right. It was quite accurate. So there was no problem there.
Now, what about, you went to rest shortly after this. So what would happen in rest?
In rest?
Rest period. Yeah. Well, it's only a couple of days.
You were taken out of the line, and you were taken to an area, maybe half a mile back or something like that, where you were able to relax, or supposedly. But the Germans never let you relax because they fired occasionally into the rear areas to harass whatever was there. They knew tanks behind the line were resting, so they fired over the rear areas just to annoy people and hopefully cause some damage. And occasionally you found that you had to move from one area because it was so big pounded, you moved to another area. And sometimes we wondered if Italians didn't give them the information that there were tanks or units in a certain area.
Now, what would you do in rest?
Oh, you'd wash and shave and change and get a decent meal going and eat it and enjoy it with a little bit of relaxation. Maybe write home, read letters from home, because these would be brought up to you, see, in this rest period. You read letters from home, maybe write a letter home, read a paper, or if it was a newspaper or forces paper or something like that, and have a good sleep.